This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Almost 50 years after the epic battle that changed the course of the Vietnam War, author Mark Bowden visited the city of Hue to piece together what happened. Like his previous books about infamous military operations in Somalia and Iran, Bowden investigated the twists and turns that led to the dramatic 24-day conflict and the political and military failings that allowed the United States to win the battle but lose the war. Mark Bowden is the best-selling author of more than one dozen books, including Black Hawk Down, Guest of the Ayatollah, and Killing Pablo. He's also a journalist and a professor, and his new book is Hue, 1968, A Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam. Mark Bowden, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Also joining this conversation is Jay Price, WNC's military reporter. Hello, Jay.
Glad to be here.
Mark, tell us about this particular event and this particular battle. Of course, a key city in the Tet Offensive in 1968. Why did you choose this one?
I think because the battle fought in Hue was so remarkably out of scale with the rest of the Tet Offensive, certainly, and I think even most of the other clashes in the Vietnam War. This battle in Hue was more reminiscent of the kind of fighting in World War II in European cities or in Seoul during the Korean War. And it really stands out as, I think, the most intense and bloody event in the entire Vietnam War. And I believe it was one that most people didn't see in the as being as significant as it actually was. So,
well, and
it interested me.
Yeah, and if before we get to the details on what happened at Hue, we should take a half a step back and talk about the Tet Offensive, which really took the Americans by surprise. Tell us about that.
Well, this came in at the end of January of 1968, and the United States had been fully engaged in Vietnam with troops on the ground involved in actual combat for 3 years at that point. And the assessment by General William Westmoreland, who headed the American military effort in Vietnam, and by President Johnson and, the military advisors in his administration, was that the United States was winning this war, was sort of neutralizing the Viet Cong and the whatever North Vietnamese troops were in the country. In fact, Westmoreland had come back to the United States in November of 1967 and given a speech at the National Press Club where he, for all intents and purposes, said that the war was going swimmingly well and was winding down and that American troops would begin probably to come home and at the end of 1968. So the Tet Offensive, which was just this extraordinary simultaneous attack on every major city and town in South Vietnam, which included taking the city of Hue, which was the third largest city in South Vietnam, was a tremendous shock and definitely contradicted the official version of events.
Right, and as you say, Hue, the third largest city, but in a way the cultural capital of South Vietnam, so a very important city and a powerful symbol when that city fell, right?
It was. It was the ancient capital of the United Vietnam, and as such had a lot of sort of cultural significance in Vietnam itself. By taking Hue, the North Vietnamese, the communist force, were essentially planting their flag on, the traditional capital of Vietnam.
Jay Price, you have been to Hue. Give us a sense of that place. Very different environment than the jungles that we were used to seeing when the footage came back from Vietnam.
Well, it's simply beautiful. I mean, there's no other word for it. It's one of the most beautiful places in Asia and in the world. And I think given this history, heartbreakingly beautiful. There's this old city inside these thick walls like a castle almost. And it's on one side of the Perfume River, the evocatively named river, and on the other is the new city with this French colonial architecture. It's just a beautiful place. And I mean, to me, the story of the fighting there has this subtext that all these terrible, kind of ugly things were being done in and to one of the most beautiful places that there is. And, you know, in many ways, I'm sure Mark intends this book, and it is. It's a great metaphor for the war, and that city is a metaphor for what happened to Vietnam itself.
And in a lot of ways, you know, Mark, we talk about the U.S. not being at all prepared for this coordinated attack in 100 locations around Vietnam, orchestrated by Hanoi, certainly, but the Viet Cong and the National Liberation Front plays a key role in this. Not prepared for that, but again, the kind of fighting that they were going to have to undertake in Hue, very different. Talk about what they saw there and what they had to do to take that city back.
Well, the Marines, who were the ones who did the fighting in the city, for the most part, a lot of them didn't even know there were big cities in Vietnam. They had been, you know, those who had been there for any length of their year-long or 13-month-long tour had been off fighting in villages or in the jungle or in the rice paddies. And, you know, the fact that there was this big city with bridges and wide avenues and hotels and restaurants and traffic, you know, came as a great shock to them. Fighting in a city also was terrifying because at least when you're out in the open and someone starts shooting at you, you can usually orient yourself pretty quickly to where the threat is. And in a city, that's not so easy. It's basically a 360-degree shooting range, especially because the city was pretty much completely taken by the communist forces. So, you know, Marines found themselves in an environment where it was difficult to tell where they were being shot at from. And there, you know, there was just, at least in the first stages of the battle, no place safe.
And within the city itself is something called the Citadel, which was itself a fortress within a fortress, right? And this becomes a key target for the Marines when they try to take the city back.
Yeah, I mean, as Jay said, I mean, it looks like something out of Game of Thrones. It's an enormous fortress with 30-foot-high walls, 30 feet thick, only 9 entrances or gates into the citadel, and these over a moat, which is, you know, surrounds the fortress. Inside is about 2 square miles, and there were probably 60, 70,000 people living inside that citadel. You know, it was really tough fighting to take the city back from the communist forces in Southern Hue, the modern part of the city, where the fighting just proceeded, you know, block by block, house by house. But once you get up inside the citadel, there's another order of magnitude of difficulty with enemies shooting at you from the top of the walls and on top of buildings. It was a terrifying and tragic scene for that lasted for almost a month.
You just talked about this, that the Marines were going to have to go block by block, house by house. We actually have a clip of tape with CBS correspondent John Lawrence, who was covering the war at the time. He was in Hue. He is speaking with Colonel Ernie Cheatham, who I know you write about extensively in the book, and he's interviewing Cheatham. In fact, they're at day 5, I believe, in Hue, about what it is you're going to have to do and how you're going to have to do it. Let's listen to this clip.
Colonel Cheatham, what's the objective and what are your men about to do?
Well, I've got 2 companies here that are just about to clear the next 2 blocks up. I've got 1 company in this big building here that I guess is the end of the Hue University, and they are going to start firing in support of Foxtrot Company, which will be going up this road here on the left and attempt to take a couple large wall buildings that are on up about 500 or 600 meters.
What kind of fighting is it going to be?
It's house to house and from room to room.
Nope.
There you go. Colonel Ernie Cheatham talking with CBS correspondent John Lawrence in 1968 as the Marines were taking the city of Hue. I'm sitting here talking with Mark Bowden, whose new book is Hue 1968, A Turning Point in the American Vietnam War, and Jay Price, WNC military reporter.
Mark, I wanted to ask you something about craft and how the nature of the Tet Offensive and the nature of the Battle of Hue kind of plays into that. I mean, it was all secret, right? I mean, there was this long period of planning quietly, and there was an American and South Vietnamese intelligence failure that didn't pick up on it. But as far as, like, writing a book, developing a narrative based on this, it seems like with all this buildup, these secret preparations, it's just a great opportunity to kind of set the stage, build character development, and then you know, for the attack itself. In the book, you don't just slow down time to add in detail. You basically stop time and move all over the battle, looking at it from the perspective of all these people you've developed in many cases before the fighting started.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you're trying to wrap your arms around a story that has literally tens of thousands of characters, the only way to, that I can imagine it is to have a deep understanding of the battle itself and use the battle and, you know, where the flashpoints were at any given point as the sort of spine of the story. And then you fill in, as you said, Jay, the details of each of these aspects of the battle with all of these individual stories. In that sense, this book, I envision it as like one of these portraits that you sometimes see that are made up of hundreds of little photographs. And, you know, the photographs are so small that they impart just like a little tone or color. When you step back, you see this portrait of a face. But when you look very closely, you see there are hundreds and hundreds of these individual snapshots.
Well, one of the things that complicates the work for you, it seems, is the good news and bad news of having the archives suddenly open up to you and having a lot more information than certainly we had at the time. And I'm wondering about some of that. Jay just made reference to it, which is the catastrophic intelligence failure. This was a well-coordinated, well-planned operation that the Americans seemed to have no inkling was going to happen. How? What do we know now about how they were unable, how the U.S. was unable to, or why the U.S. was caught unawares?
Well, I do think that the, you know, American intelligence in Vietnam and the South Vietnamese intelligence knew that something was probably going to happen over the Tet holidays. General Westmoreland was convinced that the major attack would come at Khe San, which was a small Marine outpost near the Laotian border. And that was partly because Westmoreland had convinced himself that the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese lacked the strength to mount any kind of serious attack on urban centers, that they essentially were only able to really, you know, fight out in the further reaches of the country. And in that, he was completely wrong. I think that reflects a general disconnect between the people in South Vietnam and what was actually happening on the ground and what the military comprehended. You know, you have to give the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong credit. They're tremendously skillful at moving men and equipment around without attracting a great deal of notice. They assembled an army of almost 10,000 outside of Hue. I think it also reflects the degree to which the Vietnamese in the rural areas supported the revolution. I don't think you can mass that many men in arms in a particular place in a hostile environment without somebody tripping an alarm somewhere. So, you know, I think that those are the things that that suggests to me.
What about lessons learned in all of this, military and political? What have you gathered about those lessons in the 50 years since Hue?
Well, I do think our military does a pretty good job of learning. And in fact, you know, you mentioned Ernie Cheatham, and there's one of my favorite scenes in the book is when Colonel Cheatham is ordered to go into Hue and lead this battle to retake the city. He realizes he doesn't know how to fight in a city and that his men don't. So he found old Marine Corps manuals about assaulting fortified positions that were really holdovers from the Korean War, and spent the whole night before he went into the city sort of schooling himself in strategy and tactics, and which he took with him to Hue. So the military learns and I think improves as an institution over time. Our politics, I think, don't. I mean, I think we may be doomed as a democracy to repeat a lot of the mistakes that we've made in the past, no matter how many of us like me, you know, write books about it. I think we periodically in this country dumb ourselves down, by which I mean we exclude the knowledge of regional experts, people who know the culture and language of the areas around the world where we end up being involved, and instead are directed by the priorities of our own domestic politics, as if somehow our politics and the things that are important to Americans can be projected on a place like Southeast Asia or Vietnam. And it has a tendency to make us believe things are a lot simpler than they really are.
Simplistic narrative, and also, and maybe this is what you just said, but it seems to me that it's really underestimating the strength of our opponents in this case, a kind of American hubris, the idea that we must be the dominant force on Earth, so therefore it will only take a couple of weeks.
I think arrogance would be the appropriate word, tinctured with racism, and without question. I mean, there was the part of Westmoreland's whole theory that the enemy lacked the capability of doing what they subsequently did, reflected his own, I think, racist attitudes and underestimation of the enemy. And I think what's even more damning in Westmoreland's case is that even after the city of Hue was taken, he continued to deny that it had been. And he got a lot of young Americans killed because he refused to face facts.
Part of this, of course, was LBJ not wanting to hear it was going to cost more to win this war than what we were already spending.
I think that's true. I mean, I think that his generals wanted to please him, and he trusted them implicitly and was sorely disappointed by them. In fact, Westmoreland, within months after the Battle of Hue ended, was removed from his command. So, you know, I think, you know, reality has a way of sort of forcing itself into the room.
It seems like not only do we underestimate the Vietnamese, we overestimate it in this case, right? I mean, you quoted in the book Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara pretty quickly, pretty early on, saying the Tet Offensive was a public relations problem rather than a military one, which wasn't entirely untrue, right? I mean, they pretty much depleted themselves in this fighting, and we're kind of on the ropes a little bit.
Oh, but they thought they were going to win, didn't they? I mean, let me ask you that, Mark. Did they expect to win this, or was this just going to be a show of force, and then obviously we're not going to win, but, you know, we'll humiliate them in the process?
Yeah, well, there were factors, and there were people in Hanoi, like Ho Chi Minh, for one, General Giap, for another, who didn't believe for a minute that the Tet Offensive would be successful or end the war. But by then, younger, more zealous party leaders were convinced that the Tet Offensive would ignite a national popular uprising in the South and that it would be the culminating act of the war. So they were every bit as over-optimistic or ill-informed as the American forces were. You know, so there was no shortage of people, you know, making errors in judgment, that's for sure. I do think that the you know, you quoted McNamara as saying this was a public relations problem. I think this reflected the official view, which was shaped by what had happened in Saigon and in some other cities, smaller cities throughout Vietnam, where the enemy attacks were fairly small and fairly rapidly defeated.
And then, of course, the U.S. was successful. Tet did fail in ejecting the Americans, so as it is for the North Vietnamese, a military failure, but it was a public relations success. It did turn out to be the turning point and the beginning of the end for U.S. involvement. Mark?
It was, yeah. But I'd say in the case of Hue, evicting the communist forces ended up destroying 80% of the city. 80% of the citizens of Hue were homeless when the battle ended. So that had a profound impact on a lot of South Vietnamese people who were, I think, as sensible people are anywhere who were caught up in a civil war, kind of waiting to see who was going to win before deciding wholeheartedly to choose one side or the other. So I think a lot of the faith that the South Vietnamese people had in the Saigon government took a real blow during the Tet Offensive. And then of course, in the United States, you know, the Johnson administration and General Westmoreland had sort of set themselves up for an enormous fall by being so optimistic in their projections and you know, overselling the idea that this was going to be an easy win when the Tet Offensive, I think, came along and definitely contradicted that story. And a lot more Americans began to question the wisdom of staying there.
Mark Bowden is a best-selling author of more than a dozen books, including Black Hawk Down. His new book, Hue, 1968, A Turning Point in the American War in Vietnam. Mark, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure, Frank.
Jay Price, WUNC's military reporter. Jay, thank you.
Thank you.
And Mark Bowden's going to be speaking at the Airborne and Special Operations Museum in Fayetteville on November 12th, at the Fayetteville Barnes & Noble on November 13th. He's going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh on November 14th. And you can see all of that at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of Zen So Fly. Stay tuned.